So a colleague of mine was camping out here, and he is both an ant biologist and photographer, and he sent me some pictures and said, "Ed, guess what I found?" And it's, you know, I would have taken his word for it, but the pictures were also obviously it.
It's a warm May afternoon in the Texas Hill Country. I'm walking along a gravel trail in Lost Maples State Natural Area with biologist Edward LeBrun.
I believe that was winter of 2019 was when he contacted me. And so I was planning on coming out in the spring when the ants were more active.
But then the COVID-19 pandemic hit. He had to wait until fall of 2020 to see for himself.
So, so he was definitely right then. You got out here and they were...
Yeah, they were everywhere. They're mainly in the drainages, right up along the creek.
He's talking about tawny crazy ants, an invasive ant from South America. Over the past 15 years or so, they've been popping up across the southeastern U.S. like paratroopers dropping in from an invading army. Where they take hold, they wipe out most of the native insects and other small invertebrates. And that has ripple effects, especially for birds which rely on insects to raise their chicks. Crazy ants also cause a lot of damage in homes, where they swarm inside walls and short out electrical equipment. Here in Lost Maples, the tree-lined canyons of the Sabinal River and Can Creek provide the perfect habitat for tawny crazy ants. So it's not too surprising that this is one of the newest fronts in the ongoing invasion.
Presumably it got here with in an RV. So anywhere you've got folks taking their RVs to go camping, if they live in environments with crazy ants, the crazy ants will move into their RVs and then they'll move out when they're camping. And so that's how, in my experience, how most state parks get these ants.
I'm Mark Earhart, and this is Point of Discovery. Edward LeBrun studies invasive species at the University of Texas at Austin's Brackenridge Field Laboratory, which is part of the growing Texas Field Station network, a base from which scientists and students can team up to learn about how to protect unique natural resources in Texas. We're here on a stealth mission to test a new weapon in the battle against the destructive tawny crazy ant. Now, I'm not a biologist, so ants are pretty much ants to me. But as we're walking along, we notice a thick trail of ants crossing our path near the water.
Oh, they're crazy ants for you. There's a nice trail.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Pretty much. So, like, you immediately, you didn't even have to bend down to tell this was crazy ants. I mean, what was the tip-off? It's just the way you're walking,
or? Well, where I know where I am, for one thing.
Well, yeah.
But I mean... But
even
yeah,
if I saw ants from 5 feet away, I just say those are some ants.
It's the uniform size, the body size in general. You get an eye for it. The coloration, so there's this red, brown color, a tawny color, butterscotch. That's actually what the name it refers to. Uh-huh. This large trail is another thing that is a tip off.
Mm-hmm. But the crazy part, what does that come from?
It has to do with their foraging biology. So when they're foraging for resources, they do a lot of turning. So on that trail you saw, they were just walking straight along the trail.
Yeah.
But if they're actually looking for food, they'll be spread out and doing a lot of rapid high angle turns as they move. And it looks like a lot of sort of random movement patterns. And so that's sort of where the name came from.
So now I know what the enemy looks like. It's time to engage in some bio-warfare. A few years ago, LeBrun and his colleagues discovered a kind of fungus that naturally infects some populations of crazy ants. When it's present, the ant populations slowly decline, and in some cases, disappear altogether. He's been working for the past few years to weaponize this natural pathogen and use it as a biocontrol agent.
Okay, so what have we got here in the truck we're taking out?
We are taking out some 5-gallon orange buckets from Home Depot, Homer buckets, that have screened lids on them. We've cut some holes in the paint lids and made screened them, and inside of them are nests of tawny crazy ants that, and it's mostly rotten wood that the ants are nesting in.
2 weeks ago, he came here to Lost Maples and collected crazy ants from 5 nests around the park and put them in these buckets. He brought them back to his lab in Austin and added other crazy ants that are already infected with the fungus.
And then we are going to go and return them to the nests from which we collected them. So there's going to be great homecoming celebrations.
It's like Thanksgiving break, when college students go home to see the family and bring back a cold virus, which everyone in the whole house catches.
Exactly.
This is one of 2 methods LeBrun is trying in Lost Maples to wipe out the crazy ants. He's already tested a simpler version where he took some infected ants from another site, hours away, and dropped them off in the park. This time, we're testing a more complicated version of the same idea, where ants from Lost Maples are brought to the lab in Austin, spend a couple of weeks with infected ants, and then come back to Lost Maples. LeBrun wants to see which method has the greatest impact.
So you're hoping that they'll both work equally well, just that the other one will be simpler? And...
yeah, exactly. Hopefully they won't be any difference and we'll just not do this ever again, because it's a lot of work. But we'll see.
Well, I'm glad I could be here on a 95-degree day doing the complicated version with you.
Yeah, exactly. Walking the better part, three quarters of a kilometer, carrying heavy buckets full of dead wood and ants.
For science.
For science.
And so we tromp along the trail for a while, until his GPS receiver tells us we're close to the first site. And then we veer off into an area around a big tree with rocky ground and patches of leaves and logs.
One gals, you're home. So these gals, the blue lid is what we're returning. But now we have to find the nest. So we're going to have to sort of turn over some wood and some rocks.
LeBrun is looking for the telltale signs of a robust crazy ant colony. Lots of female workers, just like the ones he's infected, and plenty of babies, or brood.
Ah, here we go. Is that big enough? It's pretty big. So here's the nest.
So you got a big rock here that you've turned over?
Yeah. Big rock here we've turned over, and you can see there's a bunch of ants. Some of them are carrying brood. You see that one's carrying a pupa.
Oh, okay.
That little white blob. And they're all down in this nesting in this crack in the soil. And you can see there's quite a bit of brood down in this crack.
Okay.
So this would potentially be a decent spot to return them, but before we do it, let's just look a little more.
Okay.
And see if we can find anything better than that.
He's looking for the biggest nest he can find to return the bucket full of infected ants.
Yes. And here is another nest. But how big is it? How big is it? They're down in this dense leaf litter, and they're inside this log. In pretty good numbers, but I'm still not convinced. They haven't sold me yet. We'll keep looking.
All right.
So far, after a few minutes, he's found a pretty good rock with an active crazy ant nest under it. And a log that's just okay.
All right. So here we have a third nest. They're in here, but...
mostly just in the wood?
Yeah, and I'm not seeing a lot of brood. I saw the most brood by that rock. So we're just going to go ahead and do that rock. All right, gals, this is where you're going.
Okay.
Get out of there. You didn't know when you're home.
He dumps big chunks of wood and thousands of ants and brood onto the nest, and then he covers them up with a big rock.
Give them a little shade.
Yeah, make them happy. And that's done.
All right.
One down, four to go.
After he finishes these inoculations, it's going to be a long waiting game to see the impact of the infecting fungus.
And, you know, what happens next is super variable, honestly. So, you know, it may just take and spread like wildfire, and within one year of inoculation, having the entire population infected with this disease. And we've also experienced where we do the inoculation, it takes and it spreads, but at a much more moderate pace. I don't understand that difference yet.
Even when it does work, it can take several years to dramatically cut down crazy ant populations.
Not a quick fix.
Not a quick fix. Yeah. But a sustainable fix that doesn't require, you know, continual use of pesticides or, once you've got the disease established, it's on a trajectory to where the ants are going to be suppressed below the point of causing ecological or environmental harm. It's just a matter of waiting.
Back at the campsite the next morning, I ask him how this experimental treatment of the invasive species compares to other, more established biocontrol methods.
It takes a couple years for it to become sort of prevalent throughout the system, but then once it does, the population's just it's a ratchet to extinction. I mean, they just keep declining year after year until they're gone. And that's not something we see really with many other biological control programs, ants or otherwise. It's not a typical outcome.
I remember writing about LeBrun's crazy ant research about 7 years ago, and the mood was definitely different. It was like, these ants are unstoppable. They're going to swallow a quarter of the country.
And so you go from a future scenario where the whole southeastern United States is covered with tawny crazy ants like it is covered with red imported fire ants to a scenario where you have these populations occurring, blinking, growing, and dying, and that process just happening over time over the landscape and never coalescing, never leading to the sort of large-scale geographic impacts that seemed inevitable. That's a very different, much more positive framework. And now we also have figured out how to use that tool, to have that disease to accelerate this ongoing process. So that's also really satisfying. This isn't going to be the cataclysmic invasion that we thought it was at one point, and that we have a way of addressing important environments.
Special thanks today to Edward LeBrun for letting me tag along on this field trip. Despite hours and hours on our feet for 2 days in hot weather carrying buckets, it was delightful tromping around in the shaded canyons of Lost Maples with a biologist. He kept stopping to figure out which bird was making that unusual call or to ID some insect. In a shallow pool of water, we found colorful leeches about the size of my pinky finger, flat, green, with orange and black dots on their backs. Ravens croaked their raspy calls from high above us. More than once, we nearly ran smack into a giant spider sitting in the middle of a web stretched across the trail. That's why I always let him go first. There is so much life here, so much I wouldn't have even noticed. With a bit of luck and a big boost from science, hopefully this delicate web of life will remain long after the crazy ants have come and gone. That's our show. Point of Discovery is a production of the University of Texas at Austin's College of Natural Sciences and is a part of the Texas Podcast Network. The opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the hosts and not of the University of Texas at Austin. Our website is at pointofdiscovery.org. There you'll find videos and links to more resources about tawny crazy ants. Our theme music was composed by Charlie Harper. If you like our show, be sure and tell your friends. We're available wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Our senior producer is Christine Sinatra. Thanks for listening.